Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, folks, welcome back. This is Daniel Hardy here at Golden State of Mind. I have a very special guest today, a gentleman who made his name working for NBA teams in crucial behind-the-scenes roles. He's a former video coordinator for the Washington Wizards, as well as a former scout for the Raptors and Hawks. You currently can find him breaking down NBA X's and O's on the World Wide Web. You may even know him from social media, because the man definitely has the Twitter fingers. He's at Scout with Brian, and I want to give it up for Brian Oringer. Thank you for coming on today, Brian-O. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Appreciate you having me.
Awesome. So, first things first, where did you grow up, and who was your squad when you were a kid?
Yeah, I grew up in the in Maryland, near in the D.C. area, so I was a big Wizards fan in the Gilbert Arenas, Antoine Jameson, Caron Butler era, you know, and then getting to end up working for them for six seasons was kind of a dream come true. But yeah, I've always been a D.C. local, worked for Gary Williams at the University of Maryland for a couple of years, so that was my most immediate basketball influence. But, you know, I grew up, of course, watching Kobe and MJ and, you know, obviously later Steph and LeBron and all the greats. So gotten to see a lot of great basketball for sure.
So I just want to, you know, give you a big you're welcome from Dub Nation for Gilbert Arenas, because he was ours first, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. He that was a rare, you know, one of the Ernie Grunfeld moves that I think people can agree was pretty darn good to get him for, you know, pretty cheap, at least initially, for locked up for a long time. And yeah, he'll go down as one of the great tragedies in basketball. I mean, he was so much fun, you know, to watch for that 3 or 4 year stretch. You know, it was just a shame how that went south very quickly, obviously.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Agent Zero, you know, was cooking with the hibachi stuff. It's funny because I think he may have represented the shift that was happening for where the point guard, the primary ball handler, was becoming more of a scorer as opposed to a passer. Now, if you look back at, you know, 2009 when Steph Curry was drafted, I actually have a list from Bleacher Report of the game's best point guards in 09. I'm going to read them off real quick. You got Jameer Nelson, Chauncey Billups, Jason Kidd, Jose Calderon, Tony Parker, Rajon Rondo, Steve Nash, Derrick Rose, Deron Williams, and Chris Paul. Now, when you compare that basically 10 years ago to what we have now, what would you say are the defining factors that kind of made a shift from the point guard position?
I would say, kind of like you said, I think it's gone much more to a scoring position. You know, I think a lot of those guys, you know, those were all great players, but, you know, guys like Calderon, Rondo, you know, even Chauncey to an extent. I mean, they could all score, but they were more kind of run a team point guards, you know, run your plays, execute your offense, get the ball, you know, where it needed to go. And I think today's style is a lot less about, you know, specific plays, obviously a lot less post-ups, you know, hardly any mid-range. You know, so I think the position has kind of morphed where you need guys who can hit the three at a high level and you know, big time shooters. And even if there is a little, you know, drop off in kind of the ability to run or lead a team, I think teams are willing to tolerate it if guys can put up, you know, 20, 25 a night by hitting, you know, 4 or 5 threes in a game. So I think, like you said, it's gone more to a much shooting position for sure.
Well, if we're speaking about shooting, we're definitely talking about Steph Curry. Now, I found it fascinating what you just mentioned there, talking about moving from a game management kind of quarterbacking of the game to more of a scoring type of deal there. Obviously, Steph Curry is one of the elite scorers of our generation and maybe all time. But where do you see his game management skills?
You know, I think it's good. But to be honest, I mean, I don't know. Maybe this is a controversial take in Warriors land. And I know, you know, some of their fans have been mad about a couple of the things I've said about Steph.
Uh-oh, here we go. Here we go.
No, but I mean, for my money, I think he's the greatest shooter without question of all time. And I know he certainly, you know, can play point guard, and people love to point, you know, to his high assist seasons, his MVP seasons, and I think he does okay there. But to me, he's more of a kind of an off guard. I mean, he's more of a two in my opinion. And like I said, I know you can certainly play him, in some pick and roll. You can play him at some one, but I think his strength obviously is, the incredible gravity, the best shooting of all time, the flying off pin downs, the, being able to hit 40 footers consistently. I mean, all that stuff to me is obviously his biggest skill. And I think he can, like I said, he can run some pick and roll, but I've said before, I think part of the reason why Kerr doesn't run, 40 pick and rolls a game with him, and why, there's so much back and forth with, Warriors fans disagreeing with Kerr. I think Steph can kind of see the closest pass, and he's great at finding like Draymond in the pocket if you trap. But his size does limit him a little bit to seeing like the far skip pass and passes that are much further away. So not to say he's not really good at that still as well, but I think there is, sometimes his size does affect him a little bit, and certainly being able to handle the impact and the physicality of running that many pick and rolls, I think takes a ton out of you in every single game. So yeah, I think there's something to be said for that, not to diminish from his greatness at all.
No, totally. I understand where you're coming from there. I mean, obviously, I'm sure many folks in Dub Nation would fight you tooth and nail over that. But I'm not going to right now, because I actually have a more pertinent question right now. So as a video coordinator for the Wizards, I'm pretty sure you must have crossed paths with the Dynasty Warrior at some point, correct?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay, so then I guess my question is, from the behind the scenes in the bunker where you're at with the Wizards, did you feel like your preparation for Steph was adequate? Is there a preparation for a guy like that? And what were the kind of concepts that you believe that your Wizards teams did well and maybe didn't do so well in guarding Steph?
We certainly didn't do so well, because I'm not sure if we won more than maybe one or two of those games. I think what was impossible about game planning for them was, they didn't really run a whole bunch of plays. It wasn't, staying ready for this certain play call. It was kind of just, throw the ball in the post, run that split game action that they ran so incredibly well. Pretty much regardless of what you did, Golden State just kind of read and reacted and moved the ball, and just constant, flying off those corner pinch screens for Steph and Clay and Draymond passing the crap out of the ball. So yeah, I think generally speaking, like we did our best to tell guys kind of what kind of system they'd play and how they would fly around and how locked in you had to stay. But then, sure enough, once you get tired and you're chasing Steph around for 3 miles every game, eventually a big and a guard are both going to go out to double him and try to, and see him coming off a pin down, and then the big's going to slip right to the rim for a dunk. And then the next time you worry about the big slip, so then Steph's going to come off and nobody switches out on him and he gets a three. It was just a beautiful brand of basketball. For my money, I think it was, the most beautiful offense I've ever seen personally. And it was,
don't tell that to Kevin Durant.
Say that again.
Don't tell that to Kevin Durant.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think he, I think he added something they did need, at least at the time as well. I think, obviously when he went down, they were still able to compete for a bit and, win the conference finals, obviously. But I think he clearly, and Clay obviously too, but I think would have made a difference in the finals, and just, his ability to get his own shot off at any point and kind of just, rise up over people and score was something they needed when things got bogged down a little more. So I think the true answer is probably somewhere in the middle. It was definitely a beautiful, amazing brand of basketball, but anytime you can add a guy like KD too, I think just makes it even better.
So from your vantage point, when you're watching those Rockets and Warriors clashes, especially over the last 2 years when they had Chris Paul there, what were the Rockets doing so effectively to bog things down?
Yeah, they just played probably the best, defense that anybody's played on Golden State, and they did that by switching just about everything. But, a lot of teams want to switch everything, or a lot of teams say their game plan is to switch everything. I mean, that even at times was our game plan, but you know, there's a huge difference in the intensity at which you do that, you know. So I think Houston, they did a great job just switching with contact, and anytime, you know, Steph or Clay would come off a pin down, they had PJ Tucker or whoever was the big setting the pin down just ready to switch onto him. The guard knew exactly what his job was to switch onto the big. You know, they just did it with contact. They were physical, you know, and I think they just kind of made things as tough as they could. And even still, you know, that still wasn't enough. I mean, I did the video on the Steph Draymond pick and roll that, you know, you guys ran 10 times down the stretch in that game, game six, and I think scored 8 out of the 10 times. And Houston, you know, I looked at their defense. Their defense, for the most part, was okay. Like, they guarded it all right. But, you know, Clay, Iguodala, all those guys still made huge shots, contested shots. You know, and it just, yeah, they're impossible to guard when they really get going, obviously.
No, totally, totally. I noticed that in your breakdowns, you're kind of referencing to I guess the average fan who may be upset with what they perceive to be an inadequacy in a coach or a player. And I oftentimes see you on Twitter talking about how they just don't understand what they're talking about, especially in regards to, say, like a Fizdale in New York, where people were saying he needs to, you know, activate more of a motion offense and get the ball moving. And I believe you kind of referenced how with the Houston Rockets, they pound the ball all day and score, you know, as you said, you know, 1,000 points. What do you think is the most difficult for the average fan to know about NBA offenses?
Where do I start? I mean, you know, there's a million things. And, you know, I think, yeah, I think it's kind of got to an unfortunate point in NBA Twitter where, like, you know, we have 10,000 casual fans and bloggers and people all over the place who all think they – you know, can basically do the job better or know, you know, what the coaches should be doing. And you know, my response to that, honestly, is that, you know, I probably used to be one of those people myself. You know, before I started in sports, I used to think coaches were dumb and clueless and just kind of go with the narratives online. But, you know, once you're in there, once you understand, you know, that they've been obsessing over every single aspect of basketball for the last 30, 40 years of their lives and know every intricacy of every offense and defense and play call and execution and just spend, you know, 15 hours a day obsessing over the tiniest little details. You know, I think you just develop an appreciation for how tough of a job it is. And, you know, like in the Knicks example, yeah, I think people tend to, you know, they get sucked up into like the synergy numbers that, oh, you know, the Knicks are running a ton of isolations, but, you know, if like if you watch the games, they're actually, you know, Fizdale doesn't call any, they don't run any isolations. What they run is the same plays that Golden State runs with, you know, Randall handling up top is the same delay offense that the Warriors ran. You know, they just they just don't have, you know, the personnel to really execute anything at a super high level, to be honest. You know, when your best scorer is probably Marcus Morris. So, you know, I think most of their issues are more, you know, on the front office team assembly side. And, you know, I think people tend to see the coaching as kind of the most immediate, like, you know, I don't understand how this guy wasn't in for the last shot or how we lost this game or whatever, you know, and they get very angry. But I think, you know, David Fizdale's a well-respected Spo disciple, LeBron guy. You know, I think he clearly knows what he's doing. I think he just hasn't been given, you know, enough talent in New York right now.
Well, it's funny enough you mentioned that because the Warriors' very own coach, Steve Kerr, is kind of having some difficulties with the Twitter crowd. You know, I mean, I don't know how much relevance that actually provides to, like, reality, but there is definitely a strong voice out there that is, I'd say, rather disgruntled with the way that Coach Kerr, you know, works his way around with the team. And funny enough, I think it's hard to criticize a man that went to 5 straight finals, but I think a lot of folks are saying, hey, you know, give me Steph, Clay, and KD, and Andre, and Livingston, and all those guys, Draymond, and, you know, I could do the same thing. I guess my question here is, when you see the difficulties that these young Warriors are having, obviously, thin roster and a lot of inexperience, a lot of guys under 25 years old, got some rookies in there. When you see them running the Kerr motion offense that you study so closely when you're in Washington, if there's some times in your mind where you're just like, hey, give the ball to D'Lo, high spread pick and roll, and live with what you get, as opposed to trying to, I guess, cram all this knowledge of this, you know, rather intricate style of basketball to these young guys?
You know, I think you need a balance, and I think her started to kind of find that balance, right? And, you know, it seemed to me, at least, that they were running a decent amount of D'Lo pick and roll, you know, especially in the recent few games before he got hurt. You know, but I think that even is hard too. You know, you say, okay, yeah, we got a role guy, say in Cauley Stein, but then, mm-hmm. you know, we've got Draymond, obviously, who's still not shooting the ball. We got Glenn Robinson, who nobody is all that worried about, you know, taking threes. Yeah, I mean, it's just hard, really hard to run pick and roll when you have two guys, maybe three guys on the floor at a time who teams aren't worried about shooting the ball at all. So, you know, my answer has kind of just always been that there's no magical offense. Like I said, I think that motion offense was, you know, it is beautiful and is fully capable of being beautiful the same way, you know, a Popovich offense or any great coach's offense is capable of being beautiful. But, you know, you see even the Spurs are just kind of undermanned offensively this season. They look like, you know, they're kind of winding down in terms of if they can really still stay relevant and be a playoff team. And it just, you know, I know people will even criticize Pop and say that Pop forgot what he's doing. But, you know, they're great coaches. And you know, it's 90% about the players, 10% coaching. The Golden State issue this year, I promise you, is far more about, you know, obviously the youth and the inexperience, but now, you know, couple that with massive injury problems, it's really hard to win games that way.
Did you hear that, people? Brian O just told you, stop blaming Kerr for the team struggling right there.
Yeah, I would say that. That's fair.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So how high are you right now on D'Angelo Russell? I mean, I asked that question like he was a strain of ganja, but I'm talking about, you know, as a player who a lot of folks were very skeptical of coming out of, you know, first LA, then Brooklyn. From what he's done right now with the scoring explosions, I know he's injured, but what's your perception of D'Lo right now?
I love D'Lo. I think, you know, I said last season, his numbers last season were really similar to Harden at the same age. I think he has a lot of similarities in the way he plays. You know, I think, you know, kind of like I mentioned, how the positions evolved to having point guards who can take 8, 9, 10 threes a game off the dribble, you know, hit step backs, mm-hmm. Have really deep, you know, Lillard-type pull-up range. I think he does that. I think, you know, on top of that, he's got really good feel for the game, you know, able to give you 7, 8 assists a game. You know, I think some of the questions obviously are more defense and staying locked in, and he's got to continue to grow on that end and be a really great two-way player consistently. But, you know, I think obviously his numbers, even in those 10 games with you guys, were a step up even from last season. I think, you know, I don't see any reason why he won't continue to improve and be a guy that can be an all-star really for the rest of his career. I think he is phenomenally talented and, you know, great shooter, great scorer, good, really good passer. So, yeah, I really liked adding him to the mix there and think if they, you know, had stayed healthy this season, I do think they would have figured it out and at least been in playoff contention.
You know, it's fascinating you brought up the Harden comparison because a lot of fans in Dub Nation are already anticipating him being dangled as a trade piece when the Splash Bros are healthy. And that James Harden comparison kind of reminds me back in the day when you had Russ, KD, and Serge, and then like Harden was rather expendable at that time. And then looking back, OKC really regretted it. Now, I don't think it's that level of dire for the Warriors, but at the same time, anytime you have a 23-year-old guy who's putting up that level of output, you can't just, you know, throw them on the trade block just because you have other good players.
Yeah, I mean, people were calling that him a trade piece from the second they signed him. I mean, you don't give a guy a max deal with the intention of just, you know, turning around and trading him. Like, I know some things have happened like that. That, okay, you can say, like, yeah, Blake Griffin got dealt, and sometimes it does happen. But, you know, I think for Bob Myers to give D'Lo that contract and go out and get him when, you know, if he could have hung around on the market, I think you would have seen, like, you know, maybe the Knicks and Hornets and Boston, you know, teams like that, I think would have eventually gone after him. But the Warriors came out right away and were like, wow, we view you as a max player. We view you as a core piece. And, you know, I don't buy that narrative that they ever signed him just to eventually trade him off to Minnesota or anything like that. I think they see how talented he is and think he can be, you know, part of that core with Steph, Draymond, and Clay. And, you know, I think they need a little time, obviously, and they need to get healthy, but I do think they can definitely figure that group out for sure.
Totally, totally. Now, I know you like to watch a lot of basketball, obviously. My question to you is, going forward, you know, in the next 10 years, we'll be talking about a whole new crop of point guards. Right now, when you look at the next wave of point guards, who are you looking at, like, you have to watch as far as entertainment value?
Ja is incredibly entertaining. I think he's the type of guy that'll lead the league in assists someday. You know, he's pretty high up there.
Even wow.
Memphis only playing him 26, 27 minutes a game. I think he's got an amazing feel for the game. You know, I think he shows flashes of shooting and definitely can score and get to the rim and play with a lot of athleticism. But he's got big-time feel. He's high up there, I think. Who else? You know, Fox in Sacramento obviously plays with amazing pace and is really fun to watch. And Trey, you know, is I think the closest thing we'll see to Steph. You know, and some of those comparisons obviously Steph didn't love hearing at first, and I think guys kind of got sick of. But I think Trey again this season has shown some of that range and shown some of you know, why he does legitimately remind people of him a little bit. So
yeah,
you know, yeah, I think there's a lot of good young pieces out there. You got to tell me who I'm forgetting, but you know, I think there is a little bit of a lull in the position right now in terms of going to that next generation. Besides, like, you know, D'Lo and guys like that, I think it's kind of up in the air, you know, who might be the next kind of great crop of point guards.
So I guess we wouldn't put Spida in there. He's more of a two guard, right?
Yeah, in my opinion. I mean, you could make an argument, but, you know, I think clearly, obviously with Conley, he's playing the two. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Okay, so then my final question
Luca,
for you.
Luca, sorry, before I get slaughtered on Twitter, I should obviously mention.
Well, hold on a second. So you're telling me Spida can't be a point guard, but, you know, big old Luca's out there a point guard?
I mean, you know, he's averaging like 8 assists a game or something. He's more in like the LeBron, you know, do you consider LeBron a point guard? I mean, most people would say no, but like, did LeBron kind of end up really playing point guard for most of his career? Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I think Luka obviously is an unbelievable pick and roll player on top of having kind of some of the step back threes and incredible range. And yeah, he's really fun to watch offensively.
Man, Luka is so nice. Like there are certain sequences where it's pretty much like he's toying with the trap defense. Like he's inviting the double, waiting for it, and then making some beautiful skip pass out of it. And to have that level of feel at such a young age, I mean, I know he played, you know, pro early overseas, but to see the way he orchestrates, it's worth a dollar for sure. In fact, I'll be seeing him in Dallas on, I think, Wednesday. So my first Luka game, I'm pretty pumped. I mean, obviously, I'm going to boo the heck out of him, but it's a boo of respect.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, that's the way to do it. Yeah, I think he's, like I said, I think being 6'8", whatever he officially is, I think he's LeBron-like in his floor vision, his ability to just see over the defense. And, you know, reminds me a little bit. I mean, you know, John is a little bit smaller, you know, than that in D.C. But when he's healthy, when he's at his best, I think he just is another one of those guys that just sees every pass and can just, you know, thread the needle perfectly on pick and rolls. So I think, you know, those guys, Harden, you know, there's some really, really elite passers in the league right now, and yeah, definitely fun to watch.
You know, it's funny you mentioned John, because I feel like, you know, that's a guy who went from all-star to kind of an afterthought because of the injuries, and a lot of people aren't really, you know, thinking of him even in the top list of great point guards right now. How do you feel about the public perception of John? Like, when people talk about John Wall now, how do you feel about that, actually knowing him?
Yeah, it's unfortunate, you know, because I think, you know, it's just another good example of the same people that build you up will quickly turn on you and tear you down. And you know, we saw it even last year with LeBron, you know, how many of those aggregator Twitter sites were calling him washed up and not playing defense and so on and so forth.
He wasn't playing defense, though. He really wasn't.
Come on. I mean, you know, there were some viral clips and stuff, but yeah, I mean, I honestly, you know, it's a little bit long, but if you go on my YouTube channel, I have like a 3-part video series where I looked at all those clips that people were killing LeBron for, and like a lot of them weren't even his fault. Like a lot of them were, you know, people not understanding what the scheme was and that LeBron actually was doing the right thing, you know. So yeah, I mean, I think you see him. I think you see, you know, Wiggins obviously was a guy who maybe rightfully so, but like last year, you know, the narrative on him was that I had some people tweeting legitimately they weren't sure he'd get another NBA contract, and you know, now he's had a great start to the season, and now he's looking like he's in all-star contention. So I think John's kind of that same way. I think he's the, you know, forgotten guy right now. I think everybody's talking about how overpaid, how horrible that contract is, so on and so forth. But knowing John, I'm definitely not counting him out. I mean, he's the best competitor I've ever been around, you know, really, really, you know, puts his heart into the game. And, you know, obviously he'll be a little bit slower coming back off these injuries and maybe lose some of that burst, but he's still a basketball savant and, you know, a guy who averages over 9 assists a game for his career and just, you know, really knows how to play the game. So I definitely, you know, maybe he won't be a perennial all-star anymore, but I wouldn't be shocked if he made another all-star game and still, you know, ends up having a lot of good basketball left in him.
So the second act of John Wall could be something to see. You know, honestly, even with a guy like Derrick Rose, you know, who I thought was completely done, to see him come back, I think it's not only a testament to these guys' wills and competitive desires, but also the advances of modern medicine. You know, some of these injuries back in the day, it was like, wrap it up, he's done. And, you know, to come back from that stuff is pretty cool. So my final question for you, Brian O, you're the Warriors head coach, and you've got the Hamptons 5. You're down 1. 8 seconds left. What play do you draw up?
I don't know. I don't want to try to do Steve Kerr's job or pretend I'd have any idea how to do that. I mean, I think, you know, I think, like I said, I think he's got a pretty darn good feel, and then people always want more. It's the nature of any industry. Like I said, you know, they're going to turn on Pop. They're going to turn on Kerr. They're going to turn on LeBron, or they already did turn on LeBron. You know, everybody eventually becomes the villain and people want more. But yeah, I mean, the thought I guess I'll leave you with is, yeah, you mentioned people saying, if you had given me that team, I could have gone out and won 75 games or whatever. And the truth is, first of all, no fucking chance. Like, no way you could do that. And second of all, I think honestly that made it a lot harder on them. I think, like, especially going against like some of those teams that you guys had an X on your back every single night, and every single night every team would have killed to beat you, and just you got, you know, the absolute best effort of every team every night. Everybody that was maybe a little banged up decided to play against you guys. All the games were on national TV, big stage. You know, and to handle that and win 73 games and have as much success as they did, I mean, that's an amazing testament to how hard they played. You know, not just in the motion. The motion offense requires a ton of really hard cuts, flying around the court, ball movement, but also defensively. You know, I think they really competed their butts off on defense as well. So, you know, coaching is, again, it's not nearly as much about X's and O's as some people think. It's much more about, you know, the spirit of the team, the chemistry, how hard they compete, how hard they play. And I think that's what Golden State, you know, I think that's the biggest thing I take away. And I've took away from watching Kerr and those teams. So more than any one play, I think that's what really matters and was really fun. And hopefully will continue to be fun to watch when everybody's healthy.
You know what? That was a far more elegant answer than just run a high Steph KD pick and roll. And I appreciate that very much. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Brian O. Tell them where to find you online.
Yeah, pretty much everywhere. Scout with Brian. Brian's with a Y. But yeah, Scout with Brian on Twitter. Scout with Brian. You can search on YouTube. Scout with Brian podcast. Pretty much across the board. Just, yeah, that's scoutwithbrian.com. So, yeah, pretty much anywhere you type Scout with Brian, you can find my stuff.
Awesome. Hey, well, thank you so much for joining me today, man. You know, Dub Nation loves hearing what other folks think about Dub Nation. It's an awesome feedback loop. And, of course, with you actually having been in the industry and scouting the team firsthand, it's great to hear your voice. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Really enjoyed it. Appreciate you having me.
All right, cool. All right, folks, you know what to do. Play this, share it, and then play it again. So take care. Bye-bye.